In the last month, the University of California has been in the news in connection with a series of massive protests by students, workers, and faculty employing a variety of tactics. Most of the time, news coverage has focused on the actions taking place at one campus or another. Similarly, most coverage has explained the protests by referencing the enormous budget cuts that have taken place at the state level. For about 30 years now, the California state government has slowly but surely engaged in a process of privatization, decreasing the amount of state money dedicated to public education, which has often led to increasing student tuition. This process has accelerated in the last decade, with student fees, what the UC euphemistically calls tuition, increasing by about 300% since 2000. Most recently, the UC Board of Regents voted on November 19th to increase tuition by 32%. At the same time, students, workers, and faculty throughout the UC system were engaged in a 3-day strike.
The state's disinvestment in public education creates the context in which these protests are taking place. However, what we want to do in this short documentary is bring into focus another piece of the story, the skewed priorities and privatization strategies being implemented at the level of the UC administration. The UC administration's culpability has been almost entirely overlooked in most media coverage. So while we completely agree with the attribution of blame at the state level, we want to make sure that the UC administrators cannot continue to divert the focus of campus activism and even co-opt it to further their own agendas. On September 25th, the day after a massive walkout and strike at the UC Berkeley campus in which more than 5,000 people participated, Berkeley Chancellor Robert Bourgeonneau sent out an official message in which he thanked students, quote, for the orderly, peaceful, and effective way they conducted themselves during the protest. He went on, your actions have sent a clear and important message to our legislators and to the California public that the state's disinvestment in public higher education must stop. We have seen time and again that the UC administrations are quick to shift the blame away from themselves, and it's time somebody put a stop to it.
The clearest voice that has emerged recently focusing on the administration is that of Bob Meister, a professor of political science at UC Santa Cruz.
If you are here today, you already know that the University of California system is at a turning point at which public higher education will either be saved or lost.
Meister has published a series of articles called They Pledged Your Tuition, in which he challenges the claim that the budget crisis has forced the UC administration to enact these massive tuition hikes and layoffs.
What the Regents plan to do is to use that tuition to issue bonds for an additional $2 billion of construction projects that the Regents have already approved. These construction projects will be financed by bonds rated AA1. The only higher bond rating is the one that Harvard has, which is AAA. And these bonds will be offered to Wall Street shortly after your tuition goes up. They're not announcing this now. They're waiting for your tuition to go up. But you might well ask how UC can get such a high rating for its bonds when it is in such financial trouble that it has no choice, it says, but to raise your tuition by 32% in a single year. How will UC get these excellent sterling bond ratings? By pledging your tuition and its ability to raise your tuition as collateral for these bonds. And it will get these sterling bond ratings by using a growing proportion of your tuition dollars to pay the cost of these bonds, the debt service and repayment.
Professor Meister's revelations represent only one piece of the UC administration's skewed priorities. In general, many students see them as not defending the mission of public education. Mark Udoff, the president of the UC system, gave an interview in the New York Times where he stated that the shine is off of public education and compared managing the UC to, quote, being the manager of a cemetery. For them, public education is already dead, and it certainly isn't worth fighting for.
This is why the actions we are going to mention here are explicitly targeting the UC administration. Our intention is to provide a different kind of report that does not reproduce the tendencies in the mainstream media to focus attention on single campuses or single actions, or worse yet, to overshadow the significance of actions focused specifically and explicitly on UC governance rather than just Sacramento. We're going to talk about actions on three different UC campuses, UC Berkeley, UCLA, and UC Davis. We're focusing on these campuses not because they're where the most important or most successful or most attended actions happened. It's simply because that's where we were, and this report is based on our experiences. For this reason, this report will necessarily be incomplete. Of course, we don't want to overlook the occupations and sit-ins that took place at about the same time at UC Santa Cruz, San Francisco State, CSU Fresno, and so on. We're all part of the same struggle, and we look forward to working together in the future.
Towards the end of October, the Solidarity Alliance of UC Berkeley, an organization made up of students, faculty, and workers, issued a call for a 3-day strike across the UC system, which was later endorsed by a number of key unions. Their call coincided with an organizing conference at UC Berkeley on October 24th, which included all sectors of public education in the state of California, and which itself had emerged and been planned as a result of the walkout on September 24th. The strike was to take place on November 18th through 20th to coincide with the meeting of the UC Board of Regents at UCLA, where the official vote on the 32% tuition hike would take place. Unions, collectives, and organizations urged protesters to converge on 2 points, UCLA and UC Berkeley.
Before hundreds of students and workers boarded buses to go to UCLA, about 1,000 protesters met for a rally at the UC Berkeley campus and then marched loudly through the streets of downtown Berkeley, stopping at Berkeley High School and entering Berkeley Community College, where BCC students joined the march. At the rally at Berkeley, news was coming that the protests had already begun at UCLA. Several students had been tased, and the police were out in full force.
Once we arrived at the tent city at UCLA, we were quickly informed that an occupation was underway, and we ran to the building to give support to those inside. As we reached Campbell Hall, students were hanging a large banner outside with the name Carter Huggins on it, effectively renaming the building in honor of the two Black Panthers murdered there in 1969. The occupation lasted nearly 24 hours, and during that time, the occupiers released a handwritten statement explaining their actions.
On November 19th at approximately 12:30 a.m., students occupied Campbell Hall at UCLA. The time has come for us to make a statement and issue our demands. In response to this injunction, we say, we ask nothing, we will demand nothing, we will take, we will occupy. We have to learn not to tiptoe through a space which ought by right to belong to everyone.
The massive protests at UCLA outside of Colville Commons, the location of the Regents' meeting, began at 5 a.m. on November 19th. Over the course of the next 7 hours, a picket line moved around the building in order to block all of the entrances to Colville, which, because it's a huge and oddly shaped building situated on a hill, was difficult to accomplish. Simultaneously, a large group of people marched to successfully block two major intersections at the edge of campus. The protesters reconvened at noon for a rally outside the entrance to Colville Commons, where a speaker announced that the Regents had just voted to pass the 32% tuition hike.
Like the rallies all over the state, students weren't the only ones in attendance.
Yo trabajo en la Universidad de Irvine. Empecé trabajando de llenito y discriminan a muchos de mis compañeros trabajadores que tienen años siendo explotados por la empresa ABM, un monopolio que se dedica a eso. Al terminar mis estudios, al no poder conseguir un buen empleo digno, tuve que irme de mojado. Los grupos de poder Un ejemplo, burgueses como Carlos Slim, Emilio Azcárraga Milmo, el expresidente Carlos Salinas de Gortari, pues empezaron a privatizar todo, como Mexicana de Aviación, Telmex, o sea, Teléfonos de México, y quisieron comprar la universidad. Y nosotros nos tuvimos que ir a la huelga durante 9 meses para que no la privatizaran, porque si no, nuestras generaciones venideras ya no iban a poder seguir estudiando.
After the rally, protesters locked arms to form a human chain around the building. If we couldn't keep the regents out, at least we could try to keep them in. Over the course of several hours, while the regents were forced to wait out the protesters outside, the police brutally attacked dozens of students with tasers, tear gas, pepper spray, and batons. Eventually, the regents were escorted out to a van, which was blocked by protesters who sat in the road, forcing the regents to flee by foot and take refuge in a nearby building. It was funny to watch them run in their suits, and we left UCLA confident that although we hadn't been able to keep the vote from happening, the regents had at least been forced to confront and hear our outrage.
On the way back north from UCLA, we received phone calls telling us that the UC Davis Administration Building, Merak Hall, was being openly occupied by several hundred protesters. Hours later, we got word that after refusing to leave the building at its closing time, 51 people had been arrested and taken to the Yolo County Jail. Another student who was assaulted by police officers outside was herself arrested on charges of assaulting a police officer. This student was kept overnight in solitary confinement.
The following day, November 20th, hundreds marched around the UC Davis campus in protest of the brutal treatment of their peers the night before. Students took over an open forum held by Davis administrators and demanded accountability for the police actions and the ongoing mismanagement of the UC system.
I saw a disturbing chart this week that showed the number of people that it takes to manage this institution, the UCs, is becoming equal to the number of people it takes to teach at this institution. And we've seen drastic cuts to what amounts to salary cuts that you just mentioned, and then salary cuts to me, and that I'm going to have to eventually pay more, which means I make less. Is there a look at changing that trend to make it that we teach and not manage?
Dissatisfied with the administration's refusal to directly respond to any of the students' questions, students walked out of the meeting and marched to Denton Hall, the financial aid building, where they staged another open occupation until the police forced them to disperse around 7 p.m. Meanwhile, that same day at UC Berkeley, another building had been occupied. Since early October, a series of sit-ins and occupation attempts had taken place on Berkeley's campus, including the successful occupation of the Anthropology Library in order to protest library closings and layoffs. Also on November 18th, an attempt had been made to occupy the Architects and Engineers Building, which houses the campus's Capital Projects and Construction Administration. About 35 people had gone into the building but were unable to lock the doors before police arrived. But the word had gotten out, and on the morning of November 20th, barricades went up in Wheeler Hall, a large and centrally located building housing classrooms and lecture halls. By approximately 6 a.m., the police had found out and cordoned off the building with police tape. Occupiers had attempted to lock down the entire building, but police were able to break in through a basement window and arrested 3 of those inside, later charging them with felony burglary. Meanwhile, the remaining occupiers sealed off the second floor. Outside, protesters were beginning to congregate, using text messages, Twitter, and blogs to get the word out, and listening to those inside speak out a window with a megaphone.
Again, thank you all for coming out. We should be seeing you shortly. We hope we'll be seeing you shortly. But again, this is the beginning of a fight. These fee increases have gone down. And the question that has been posed to all of us, like a line in the sand, is are we going to take it? Are we?
No!
Are you going to take it?
No!
How far can they push you? Can they push you any further?
No! Administrator. How about that? Lay off UDOT. Lay off.
More and more students, faculty, and workers gathered throughout the day. The numbers eventually grew so large that protesters decided to form human barricades at all the entrances and exits to Wheeler in order to impede police activities. Even heavy rains didn't turn people away. Soon, police reinforcements began to arrive. By the end of the day, UCPD, Berkeley City PD, Oakland PD, and Alameda County Sheriffs all had a significant presence on campus, and multiple helicopters were flying overhead. The police were in riot gear and carried batons, guns, tear gas, and pepper spray.
Police brutality erupted at the barricades periodically throughout the day. Several students were seriously injured, including one graduate student whose hand was crushed by a police baton and was rushed to the hospital for reconstructive surgery, and an undergraduate who was shot in the stomach with a rubber bullet. More than 100 formal complaints have already been made by those injured.
By the afternoon, the occupiers had announced four demands. First, that the university rehire 38 laid-off AFSCME custodians. Second, that it renew the lease for vendors at the Bears Lair, the only space on campus where first-generation immigrant family and non-corporate businesses are able to exist. Third, that it renew the lease for the Rochdale Low-Income Housing Cooperative. And finally, fourth, amnesty for the occupiers.
The administration played a strange but expected role during the occupation. At about 1 p.m., they sent out student body representatives to the barricades surrounding Wheeler to tell students that negotiations with the occupiers had begun, that the occupation would soon be over, and that protesters could leave. But at the same time, text messages were being sent out from the inside saying that negotiations weren't happening at all. The police had demanded that negotiations would only take place once the barricades inside had been removed. The occupiers responded that they would negotiate in any other way, by phone, through the window, etc., but that they wouldn't compromise their safety by opening the doors to the second floor. Because of the communication between those inside and out, the crowd around Wheeler decided to stay put.
At about 6 p.m., the police finally broke through the doors and arrested the occupiers. But because of the massive numbers of protesters still surrounding the building, as well as the help from certain faculty members, the administration found itself in the awkward position of having to let the occupiers free, charging them only with misdemeanor trespassing. Although none of their demands were met, the occupiers made a victorious exit to a cheering crowd and held an impromptu planning meeting with hundreds in attendance.
Since the conclusion of the three-day strike, a number of significant actions have been organized across the state. On November 23rd, about 100 supporters congregated at the Alameda County Superior Courthouse in solidarity with the three occupiers charged with felony burglary, where everyone learned that the DA had decided not to file any charges, for now. Protesters then marched to the UC office of the president in downtown Oakland, bursting into and filling the lobby, causing a general ruckus and demanding a meeting with notorious UC president Mark Udoff. At UC Davis, yet another open occupation occurred on November 24th. Protesters once again took Mack Hall and refused to leave until Vice Chancellor Janet Gong signed a document agreeing to pressure the DA to drop the charges against those arrested, guaranteeing that student disciplinary actions would not be taken against the Mack 51, and promising that the administration will engage in further discussions regarding the scheduled closure of the student cooperative housing. On November 27th, the Yolo County DA announced that charges will not be filed against the Mack 51 at this time. The case of the student who was assaulted by police officers outside of Mack Hall and later charged with assault on a police officer still remains unclear.
Across the state, students, workers, and faculty continue to protest the escalating disinvestment in public education by the state of California and the severe cuts to other parts of the state public education system, the California State University system, the community colleges, and the K-12 public schools. Momentum is building for a statewide day of action on March 4th directed at Sacramento. Official calls have been disseminated by major groups, including the United Teachers of Los Angeles, which represents 44,000 teachers and professional support personnel. They announced their resolution in support of March 4th at the November 19th rally outside of the Regents meeting.
You don't work here today, the entire labor movement will stand with you. So today is important, but tomorrow is more important. These conditions that happen right now don't happen overnight. They took 20 years to balance in the backs for workers and students for this to happen. 50 years, 100 years. We have socialism for the rich in this country and capitalism for the workers. So when the economy goes bad, they balance the budget on our back. And I want to bring you one other message, because what's happening to us in UTLA right now, in LAUSD, is in this economic Katrina. What they're moving in is privatization. We have to get ready for that, and we have to build structures and student structures, you all can be as brave as you can. The workers will stand with you. We are looking to you. We're looking to you for the long run. This is about a long-term fight. So I thank you. We're ready to struggle with you. And thank you for the opportunity to address you.
Messages of solidarity with the UC struggle have been received from across Europe and the United States. Unlike the mainstream media, these messages tend to recognize that the struggle has multiple levels and calls for a diversity of tactics. It has to spiral inward and outward simultaneously. The actions at UCLA, UC Davis, and UC Berkeley are part of a serious effort to hold the UC administration accountable for their skewed priorities and general mismanagement. Even if money were somehow to free up at the state level, there is no way we can trust these administrators. At the same time, the struggle at the UCs is clearly part of a much larger phenomenon, capitalism, and ignoring the big picture would inevitably minimize anything we accomplish. Every site is the most important, be they universities, community colleges, high schools, or elementary schools. Our statewide movement in defense of public education continues to grow each day through the commitment and determination of students, workers, and teachers of California.